Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello, and welcome to episode 138 of New Shooter Canada. I'm one of your hosts, Thomas, and with me tonight we have Mr. Benny and Mr. Mike. How you doing, guys?
Good. Yourself?
Not bad. Not bad. Pretty good for an old guy.
You know, it's no fun when you do that.
I know, but the heat's getting to me, I'm telling you. It sucks getting old.
It's not as bad as it is down south.
Oh, it must be brutal down there right now.
Oh, man. I was in Maryland, and it was a swamp. I felt like I was walking through a swamp.
So you shot guns in America. So what'd you do with guns this week, Benny?
This week in guns. Well, I picked up my buffer tube, so that's here.
Well, that's good.
I picked up my buffer tube, and I bought a $25 battle belt, so we'll see how that works out. It looks like a minimalist battle belt, so... Okay. Hopefully I'll be able to set that up and figure how that thing works, because I'm not 1,000% sure how it's supposed to run, but we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be an experience.
Did that mean that you didn't really like the plate carrier that you borrowed from Gavin? Was it Gavin you borrowed it from, or Andrew?
Yeah, it was Gavin. Yeah. I did like it, but the price point on plate carriers is a little high. And I thought $25, even if it is U.S. dollars,
yeah,
is a really good deal to pass up. So, and they, you know, generally you're going to run a battle. Like, I was talking to someone and they were saying, yeah, generally you run off your belt anyways, and secondary is really what you have put on your chest. So,
okay,
it makes sense to start with a battle belt, I guess, according to their line of reasoning, and work your way to a vest,
yeah,
or plate carrier,
yeah.
You can get some of the Condor vests up here that are very reasonably priced. A lot of people use them.
Yeah. That's what I picked up, and I paid just over $100 for mine.
Yeah, so even with shipping and everything, I'm under, I want to say, 40.
Yeah.
And then if you include exchange, I think it's under 50.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, you're still getting a bargain price compared to what you'd pay for a plate carrier.
Yeah, yeah. I could actually, the it's called DVOR, D-V-O-R. I think they're a division of Optics Planet in the States. Every so often they have these deals going on. And it's one of those things where, you know, you sign in, you get the deal. They send you emails every so often. It's kind of annoying and whatever. But if you have a place to ship things in the States, it's actually good. Like, it can get some good deals.
They sell everything too. Optics, cameras, everything.
Yeah, yeah. The only issue is if you can even find a magazine that's Canadian legal, they won't ship it even in the States if you're using a Canadian credit card. Like that, I originally was trying to get a lower parts kit from them, and because they're not a licensed exporter, they won't even sell if you have a Canadian credit card, because they can't aid or abet in anyone trying to export the stuff, even if it's like, even if they're shipping it into the States, if they think it's possible that you could ship it outside, they won't ship it to you. So
yeah, if they have any reason to suspect it, yeah.
So that's why I ended up getting my lower parts kit from Brownells. But yeah, I've got a couple, quite a few things from them, and I don't think I've been disappointed. It's more been a like, I should have read this, like, the description better, but no, I got a fixed blade knife from them. I got a couple of duffel bags that were really good. I haven't been disappointed. So we'll see how this belt turns out.
That's good.
So that's what I picked up in the States. So then I went shooting, I said. So we went to this indoor range, and I was telling my friends that, you know, I have to drive an hour and a half to go shooting, and, you know, that's like a whole day event. So Friday morning, we get up bright and early at like 9 a.m. and drive 15 minutes to the shooting range, shoot for an hour and a half, and then, you know, 15 minutes later, we're back home. So it was quite an experience being able to shoot in the city and pretty close by. So that was nice. So I ended up shooting, I'm not sure the length of the barrel, but it was a Glock 43 subcompact. So,
okay,
we'll see what that is. So it's basically 45 with a really short handle and everything. I was horribly inaccurate with that. And then after like a magazine or two, I was surprised because I started feeling the heat coming off the barrel. So maybe it was a 45, or it could have been because it was a Glock. I've never shot a Glock before. I've never shot a plastic gun before. So I definitely prefer my Jericho to the subcompact Glock 43.
That was the first time you've ever shot a plastic gun?
Yes. Oh, a wow. Plastic handgun. Yeah.
Wow.
Have you not shot my grandpower?
Oh, maybe I have shot. Yeah, I think I have shot your grandpower. Is that polymer lower?
Yeah, it's polymer lower, but it's not a Glock, so you're forgiven.
Yeah. So maybe it was the 45 then. Like after a couple, like a mag or two, like my fingers started getting hot. So that was an interesting experience.
Okay.
It was definitely a different shoot, and I can understand how people may or may not like it. Now I just need to try a Glock and 9mm. So
yeah,
that's my next.
What model was that you said?
The 43. So it's in 45.
Okay, I thought the 43 was a 9mm.
Maybe I got the numbers wrong. Because maybe it was the 42.
I know nothing about Glock, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's 43 of them. So I mean, I don't know which one's which.
Well, I think the 43 is a real small one though, isn't it? The real tiny, tiny one.
Yeah, I thought
That's what Stacy has. It was a real small short barrel thing, Benny.
Yeah, so I think it might have been. It definitely wasn't 9mm. So.
Well, maybe it was
the 42. I don't remember which one it is, but it's the subcompact in 45. So if any of our listeners want to correct us, that'd be great.
Oh, it's 45. Okay.
Yeah, it is 45.
Okay.
You can tell we're all Glock fanboys here, right?
Yeah, clearly.
Do you own a Glock, Mike?
No.
I don't own a Glock. We know Benny doesn't own a Glock, so.
No, I'm not that rich.
I don't know if I've ever even shot a Glock. I think I dry fired a Glock, but. Yeah, I know I dry fired one because I wanted to try one out, and I didn't like the grip angle on it, I guess you could say. And it wasn't so much that I didn't like it, it's just that I wasn't used to it, and I just, when I punched out the gun, I was never on target.
No,
I didn't like it. It just wasn't natural for me, but.
A friend of mine has a couple, and I didn't like them at all, especially the 40. I found the 40, it was so snappy, it was actually hurting the webbing of my hand, and the grip angle was so uncomfortable, I couldn't get a good shot off on it.
But with that said, that's also kind of what's nice about Glock is that if you don't like the standard 1911 grip angle, Glock is, I guess you could almost say, the furthest thing from it. So it's definitely up there for if you want to try out new guns and you're looking for something new, it could be what fits your hand best.
Oh, yeah, definitely try it. There are people that love Glocks. They can't stand the 1911 or any other thin grip like that. They like the Glock grip. It fits their hand. There's nothing wrong with that. Personally, I don't like them myself, but
yeah,
nothing wrong with them.
Yeah.
So the only time before this I've ever held part of a Glock, I held the lower of a Glock. So I don't even know. I didn't even know what it felt like to hold a real Glock before this. So.
Did you shoot any other guns?
So I shot. I don't even know what who made it, but I shot a 22 action bolt rifle. Sorry, 22 bolt rifle. I'm sorry. I just drove 9 hours, so. A little zonked. So I shot the bolt action, which was chambered in 22 long rifle, and then I shot a pump action shotgun in 12 gauge. At that range, you can only shoot double up Bock.
Ooh, peppy.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's kind of interesting. Like, no, I guess birdshot would bounce back, and slugs damage the baffling. So,
Oh, it was an indoor range.
It was an indoor range. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was that. That was interesting. I don't know what model shotgun it was, but it had a really nice Surefire pump on it with the built-in flashlight. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And how did that activate, like, when you just gripped onto the pump, or?
So, yeah, if you turn, well, it's got the, it had an, I think, two toggle switches for on-off on either side. And then one of the side had a pressure switch that when you pressed it, it was momentary on, and when you let go, it turned off.
Okay.
So that was pretty cool. I think GOC, actually, Gun Owners of Canada, is having a contest with that as one of the prizes, but I'm not 1,000% sure.
Okay.
So yeah, that's pretty much all I did in guns.
What about you, Mike? What you doing guns this week?
I did a few things. A few weeks ago, I talked about how I bought those shims for the GP100 for the hammer. And when I put them in, I put one on either side, and it didn't really hold the hammer out because it almost appears that the spring is, I guess you could almost say, pushing on one side of the hammer, causing it to almost twist, if that makes sense. So the one side was still dragging even after I put the shims in. So I don't know why I didn't think of this before, but I thought, why don't I just take the shims and put them both on the same side? So I did that. I took them out and I put them both on the same side, and now it's actually holding the hammer away from the frame enough that it's not rubbing anymore. So
that's cool.
That's working out well. It's at least, if nothing else, it's peace of mind knowing that it's not rubbing on the frame anymore. I did some practice dry fire draw with Sarah. Just working on that, going through that before our match, which we shot yesterday, was the an IDPA cancer donation match out in Eganville. It was an awesome match. I think it was 9 stages long. Had a great time. It was the first match I have actually shot. I wore contacts. I had gone to my optometrist and I told him that I wanted to try going with the contact route so that I could pretty much wear whatever safety glasses I wanted to.
How'd they work out?
Well, A, I got the contact in and within 20 minutes. So, I mean, that's a good start for me to begin with. First thing I should have noted is, do I have tinted safety glasses? Apparently, I do not. All I have is clear.
Ooh, and you're outside?
Yeah, out outside. So it was a little bright. It was a little overcast at times, but I mean, I guess my eyes just kind of got used to it. It was very different. Before this, I had always shot with prescription glasses that are, what do you call them, transition, which was always awesome for being outside because no matter what the weather was like, the glasses were always exactly what you needed. But so that was a bit different. I'm going to need to find and pick out a set of safety glasses now. And yeah, it was good. Sarah did awesome, even with her 1911 breaking. So,
what happened?
She kept having failures to extract. Pretty much, it would not pull the round out. So
was it the extractor or the ejector on it?
We think it's the extractor, but it's hard for me to say that because I wasn't up there when she was shooting. But essentially, it would. Well, I wouldn't call it a double feed because really it's because the case never came out of the chamber and then the next round would jam into it, but it would kind of come halfway out of the magazine. So yeah, it was just a mess. And it happened like 3 times in a row on one stage. And at first Sarah was going to go clean it and we started cleaning it. And then it was like, you know what? She had her M&P. So it's like, why don't you just run over, grab your M&P and shoot with that for the rest of the day. So she did that and it worked out great. She even got compliments after she switched to the M&P. Some people were asking, why didn't she just shoot that? They thought she was shooting better with her M&P than she was with her 1911.
Well, she is the better shooter out of the two.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm not denying. But no, it's great. And we also found out something interesting I forgot to mention during the dry fire practice. So when we were down in Florida, there were a few times when she would start a stage and she would take her first shot and the magazine would like fall out or like partially come out and she'd have to pretty much tap rack, things like that, do some remedial action. So I just kind of thought while we were doing the dry fires, we were focusing on drawing the gun, let's just throw an empty mag in there and see what happens. And every once in a while, we kept noticing that the mag would pop out. And then I realized that there's a little bit of wiggle in her new holster she had gotten. And if you actually push in on the gun, it would actually activate the magazine release. They never did like a cutout or anything for the magazine release.
Oh.
So, and it was like tilted in. So at first I was just going to heat it up and try and bend it back. But then I kind of thought that's too much work. So I just took an X-Acto knife and cut it out.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah. But we did that. And like you could actually see, once we realized what it was obvious, right? And you could actually see the stippling pattern on her magazine release. You could actually see it embedded into the holster where it had been pushing up against it.
Now, was it the standard mag release? Would you put an extended one on?
It was a standard magazine release, but we did put a lightened spring in there.
Okay.
This is the same holster that she had problems from day one, right?
Yeah, the one she ordered up from the U.S., so. Yeah. I know.
You know, Red Hill Tactical, we have a code for a 10% discount code, and they make some really nice holsters.
He'll even fix your stuff and you send it to him, right? If you buy it somewhere else, you can send
him somebody else's stuff, and he'll fix it for you.
Yeah. Well, actually, after this match, and after we, like, on our way home, I kind of said to Sarah, you know, if this 1911 thing isn't working out for you, you can switch back. Like, don't feel like you have to shoot that gun just because you bought another gun. And she's like, oh, you know, she's like, well, you do have that discount code. Maybe I'll go on there and I'll buy one of those kits, and then she can get the pretty pattern and stuff like that, so that she'll have a pretty setup for her M&P as well. So,
and maybe get her an Aztec extractor.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was thinking about, is upgrading her extractor. But I don't know. We'll have to see. Earl Green was actually in our squad, and I was talking to him. He has a lot of knowledge on 1911s, and he actually was asking, you know, oh, what springs do we have in there for recoil and hammer springs? And I couldn't remember if I put the 9 or the 10-pound recoil spring in there, but even he recommended going up. And his thought was, if the recoil spring was too light, it's the extractor jumping out of the case. Like moving, almost like the slide moving back so fast that it's jumping out of the case and not gripping it.
That's possible too. Yeah. That's a good point.
So that's the other thing I'm thinking we're going to put the original springs that the gun came with back in there and possibly try running it like that for a while and see how it works.
Well, hopefully she gets it running.
Yeah, hopefully. I'd like to see it running even if she decides that, you know, she'd rather shoot the M&P for competition. I'd just like to see it running, because, I mean, having a gun that, well, I wouldn't say broken, but not working right, sitting in your safe, it's just frustrating.
That's a 9mm, right? It's 9mm.
Yep, 9mm.
Okay. Somehow I know that feeling.
Did you send that gun away?
Yeah, I shipped it off. Last week I sent it off.
Okay.
I heard back from the custom sheath maker, and my custom sheath for my Buck 112 is coming. It should be, I'm tracking it now. It should be here on Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, good.
Mail call is always awesome.
I didn't do a lot of shooting myself. I just went up and I just took my X-Trim, my X-Caliber, and my Kimber 1911 and just did some target shooting today. It was too windy outside, but I noticed I really do much better with shooting at the bullseye targets, much better with the black sights like on the 1911 than I do with the fiber optics. Outside, the fiber optics work good, or if I'm on the move, I find the fiber optics work really good. But if I'm doing for precision shooting at a 6 o'clock hold, I definitely do much better with just plain target sights. Because you can look at my targets today in the definitely tighter groups with the 1911. But if when I go outside, it's actually the way around. I actually shoot a little bit better if I'm shooting like an IPSC target. I shoot better with the X-Cal. So, And it was funny. I got in there, and we've got two dehumidifiers. We've got one in the indoor range and one in the clubhouse to keep the humidity levels down, because we are near a swamp and the groundwater is high. And somebody keeps leaving the range door open. So the clubhouse dehumidifier is having to do the clubhouse plus the range. And it's... And it's the second time I've gone in there, and it's flooded over because the auto shutoff doesn't work. So I had to go in, I had to empty the dehumidifier, and I had to mop up the whole clubhouse, and I put a sign on the door saying, keep this freaking door closed, because that's why it floods over. If it's in the small room, then it does itself. But if it's got to do the range and the clubhouse, it's too much for it. So I spent the first hour actually mopping up the range and cleaning up. But I still had the whole place to myself. I love going there on a Sunday. If there's not a match, there's nobody. And plus, it was Father's Day today too, I guess, right? But it was great. I had the whole range to myself. That's about it. I didn't play any guns, didn't break any guns, didn't fix any guns, didn't buy any guns. That's about it. I've been feeling well. So I haven't done much for the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So story one. Before I squirrel off too much, there's a really good Facebook contest up. Miss Kayla Worth is a sponsored Grandpa IPSC shooter who works at the DVC range out in BC. And to promote her raid, her page, Grandpa Distribution, is donating a P40 or P45, you get your choice, to give away to lucky winner when she meets or exceeds 500 followers at the close of the open house on the 25th. They'll award the pistol that night. So the contest notes are that it's only for Canadian residents only. Well, I got the posting as soon as it came up, and I shared it with every gun page I belong to. Gun Owners of Canada, I shared it all over the internet. So when I first looked, it was a brand new page. When I first looked at it and I looked at the contest, it was 250 likes on the page. My phone, my Facebook notifications didn't stop for 2 days. She's over 600 notifications or likes already. So Grandpa did an update because he didn't think she'd get enough likes by the 25th to get, because what they originally said, if he gets 500 likes, she'll give it away. If not, he'll have to go to 750. Well, they hit the 500 in the first night. So what they've done is they're updating it. So if they get up to 1500, they're going to give away two guns at the open house. There's already one going. So you already get a chance of winning a P40 or P45. And if they get up to another 1000, he's going to give away a second gun at the open house too. So like and share Kayla. It's, Kayla's competition shooter Facebook page for a chance to win one of two awesome pistols. Links are in the show notes. And, we've had such luck winning contests. So a contest like this, I'm going to promote because, well, Mike and Benny haven't won anything, but Kelly and I have won guns. And
I was going to say, I don't feel like there's a lot of luck going around on this podcast at the moment.
Well, some of the hosts do really, really well. And she is cute, too. So go on there. So she's a pretty girl, and she can shoot. She can really shoot.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what's story two about this AR lower crap that the Mounties are doing?
So the RCMP is making all AR 80% lowers prohibited. Receiver blanks are firearms as defined in Section 2 of the Criminal Code for the following reasons. A receiver blank is nearly complete receiver of a firearm and falls within the adaptability clause of a definition of firearm. The manufacturer of a receiver blank has proceeded to a point where it is no longer useful for any purpose other than the receiver of a firearm. Receiver blanks are only destined to be firearm receivers. Receiver blanks are available as separate components, but are often sold as part of a kit, which includes the receiver blank plus all necessary equipment and tools to complete the receiver and the spare part to assemble the receiver into a working firearm. They can be classified as non-restricted, restricted, or prohibited based on Section 84(1) of the Criminal Code. The most common in Canada are for Colt M1911, SIG 226, and Glock 17 pattern handguns, which are all restricted, and receiver blanks for AK-47s and the AR-15/M16 pattern rifles, both which are prohibited firearms. And I assume it's not the AR-15 part that's prohibited, it's the M16 part that is prohibited. When a receiver blank is inspected by the Canadian Firearm Program and determined to be a firearm, it will be published in the Firearms Reference Table, FRT. Future import and retail sales of receiver blanks will be available only to individuals or businesses that have the appropriate firearms license. Restricted and prohibited receiver blanks must be registered.
So I don't know about you guys, but where have you ever seen a non-restricted AR-15?
There's no such thing.
Exactly.
There used to be.
So what's this like restricted, non-restricted, restricted, or prohibited? And I'm pretty sure like anything else in Canada, which you can ship in from the States, when you order one of these parts, they come with a jig for you to use. And those jigs are meant for semi-automatic firearms. So if you're using one for a full auto firearm, which is prohibited in Canada, that would be up to the border services to prevent it from coming into the country, along with all the other necessary parts to make it full auto. So I feel that's a big problem with their that story.
Well,
but yeah.
Yeah, because it's not the receiver that necessarily makes it, you know, full auto capable. It's also the internal parts inside,
right,
as well,
so,
right?
I know there was a guy once who managed to get some of those parts in Canada illegally. But again, this is all done illegally. If you wanted to do it, you can. If you're making yourself an illegal lower, it's going to be an illegal lower. Whatever.
Yeah. And you're going to be a criminal. Like, yeah.
So here's a brilliant idea by Dr. Mike Ackerman, brought to you by Chris DM Amini. The link to the full article and how to register your firearms, aka bar stock, are in the show notes. Okay, folks, it's time to teach them a little lesson. You will note that in this bulletin, the point along the manufacturing process at which aluminum ore becomes a firearm receiver worthy of registration is nowhere defined. In fact, it is not defined in law at all. Let's pick a point. Let's say you have a block of aluminum, a bar stock, You have an object that can be machined into a firearm receiver. Since we all want to remain within the law, I think it is reasonable to dutifully register all our pieces of bar stock. In order to make it easy for you, I have included below in the comments the proper registration form filled out, except for your own particular information. Have fun and play safe. So the links are going to be in the show notes for any of you guys.
I just put the link for the whole article in there, and then from the whole article, all the links, all the forms to send in your registration form to register your bar stock. Because what he's saying basically is that there's no guidelines. The way it's worded, we can just go get everybody get a piece of bar stock, get the paperwork, and send it in. And they have to register it because they can't say, they can't charge you with anything because you're following the law. Law says it could be a receiver. So they have to put a serial number on your bar stock and issue it an FRT number and everything else. If everybody does it, it'll drive the RCMP crazy. What do you think, Mike?
I think that they are trying to get ahead of a perceived problem that I don't think is a problem. But I think we're in the U.S., depending on which state you're in, where you don't need to, I guess, put a serialize your firearm as long as you don't leave the state, and as long as you're in a state that's okay with it and you can't sell your gun.
Yeah, as long as it remains in your property and does not cross state lines.
Yeah, so in the U.S., there is, I guess you could say, a benefit to using an 80% lower and building your own. But here in Canada, unless you're a criminal, you're going to register it anyways when you turn it into a firearm. So if you're a criminal, then you're already a criminal. If you're a law-abiding citizen, then you're going to register it anyways. So I don't really see, it's almost like making it doubly illegal, right? That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it doubly illegal. And
I feel like
trying to make it illegal before it even
happens. I feel like someone watched the episode of NCIS LA and thought, oh shoot, people are going to do that in Canada now. They had an episode where people were quote-unquote manufacturing firearms in California. And
that's probably exactly where it came from.
It's not a real issue, people. If it was, we'd hear about it.
I've never known anyone up here to actually get an 80% lower of anything in manufacturing.
Yeah, I was...
I'm sure there's people who do, but I don't know anybody who ever started.
Don't you still need a mill?
You either need a mill, router, or drill.
Oh, you can do it with a drill?
Yeah, like you can get a jig that will help, that you can use a drill with. It's harder. Okay. It's difficult. In no way is this easy, and I don't even think that the jigs they sell them with are even designed to use to make full auto.
Yeah, and here's a thought. If those are considered to be easily acceptable tools, and turning a 80% into a working receiver is considered to be an easy enough task.
Careful, Mike. Make it into a firearm. I think I know where you're going with this.
Then aren't all those tools and things available to turn your ARs into full autos already? Apparently that's not an issue.
Yeah, so that's exactly the problem. That's exactly where I think they're going with this. And I didn't really want to voice that, but I think there's a very, very small step. Not even a line. There's no line at all between turning an 80% into prohibited and turning your ready finished into prohibited.
Yeah.
But you would still need the other firing components.
But then that stops you from having the 80% problem doesn't begin with then, because you can buy a already finished lower and just make it illegal.
Yeah,
exactly. They're creating a problem, a solution to where there's
they're creating the problem themselves. What they're doing now is they're going to then go after the AR-15 and say AR-15s are all legal because you can easily convert them into full auto.
Even though how you still need internal parts that are very different.
You need different internal parts. You need parts you can't actually source in Canada. And you'll also need know-how that you can't access with an 80% lower anyways. So
even in the U.S., like just because I was curious, I've looked and seen what, can you even buy full auto parts in the U.S.? And you can't even buy them anyways. Like websites might advertise them. But if you actually look at it, it will say right in there that unless you have like the licensing of like a police or military armorer
and like class 3 or something.
Yeah, there's all these like other stipulations. They won't let you buy it anyways. So it's not like Benny's buying them and having them shipped down to Maryland or whatever and then bringing them up, right? Because he can't buy them online anyways. So it's not even like these are commonly available parts. And even in the U.S. where someone might have a Class 3, you know, was it before 1960-something, as long as they could still keep them, as long as it's manufactured before a certain date, that guy's not going to sell Benny his internal parts because then his gun is useless.
Yeah.
So it's not like the, it's not like these parts are just floating around and you can just buy them by the baggie.
And what's the cost difference between an 80% lower and a completed lower? Is it that much of a savings that people are going to be ordering them up here?
I think it's just the you can make it whenever you want. I did look at it at one point, and I think kits were going for, I don't even remember.
I think I saw one time they were going for like close to $300.
For the kit. So that way you can technically have it if you want to make one in the future in the States, and it's not considered a firearm until you actually put it together.
Oh, no, this was to buy in Canada. Like $300 Canadian.
Well, that's ridiculous because you can get a lower, a completed lower that's half that.
Yeah. Yep. I know. And that's just it, right? Like I said, in Canada, there is no benefit to, at least to me, unless you're, if you happen to want to be able to say that you actually built your gun, as opposed to the realist fact that really all we do is assemble ARs up here.
Yeah.
But,
well, we all disassemble them because I know, beside Ken Kowalski, I don't know anybody that could actually build an entire firearm.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the barrel, the blanks,
the lowest everything. Kit I can find in this, in a place I was looking a couple years back, 80% lower and easy jig with tooling. So that's not any of the machinery. Like, that's not like your drill or anything. That's just the drill bits and the jig. So you could cut the right holes, the right depth and everything. Mind you, these don't have 3 pin holes. They only have 2. So it doesn't even have the third hole you need. That's $270 US. Not including shipping.
So the only advantage is that it's a non-firearm.
And you can ship it.
Yeah.
That would be the advantage for in the States where you have to, otherwise you'd have to ship it to an FFL. This way you'd have it shipped straight to your door. But then if you go up to where it's marked already or it's a billet rather than forged, you're looking at an extra $10-$20. So that's like almost $300. And then if you want to get really fancy, then you're looking at a lot higher. Or actually not even.
Yeah.
And then they start getting deals where if you want to get 2 or 3 at a time, you can do that. But
yeah. Once again, in the US I could see where it could be, if you wanna, you know, avoid the man, then I could see why you might do it. But in Canada, if you're a legal gun owner anyways, then it doesn't really make any difference.
Yeah, because you're registering your firearm.
Yeah.
And you can buy, like I said, you can buy a legal semi-auto lower for a fraction of the cost of an 80%, and all and labor is already done for it.
And in Canada, you can just have it shipped to your door, right? So,
yeah.
But then again, you know, if you want, if say one day they decided to get rid of the registry and then they brought it back, then this is something that wouldn't be on that registry. And it wouldn't have been like, unlike our other firearms that when they come in the country, they're registered as coming into the country. This would never have been registered at all, ever.
Yeah.
But again, why would you need that as a legal gun owner? Just so people don't bother you, I guess. Otherwise, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
I know people that never registered the firearms in the first place. The registry is gone, and they still didn't register the firearms. They've had them for 30, 40 years. They're stored up in their attics or hidden up with their cottages, and they're never going to register them. It's grandpa's old 410 Cooey or whatever, and they're out there. Like, they're illegal guns are everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's and all this does is affect the law-abiding gun owner.
Yeah.
So, oh, well. What's new in the industry? I saw something that kind of really surprised me. The Ruger they've updated their 1911 to a 10 millimeter now. So it looked kind of cool. It's got a 5-inch black nitrate coated bushingless barrel, which is kind of different. It's got a 6-groove, 1-16-inch right hand twist. Bomar style rear adjustable sights were pretty good. But I look at the video, it's got lots of fliperosity to it. The muzzle flip on this thing is something. Because I fired a couple 10 millimeters. I fired Styx's. He's got a Tan Foglio in 10 millimeter. And it's got a nice low bore axis. And it was very pleasant to shoot. It was not much more than my 45. And then the Grand Power P40L, the longside version I played with last summer, I put some high powered loads through it. And again, it was less flipperosity than my 45. But watching the guy shoot this Ruger, like for the longest time, I was thinking about getting a Colt Delta Elite. But if it's that kind of muzzle flip in a 1911 platform, maybe a 1911 isn't the best platform for a 10 millimeter either. I think I still want one. I still want that ground power. But you know, if a 10 Foglio came my way, I wouldn't turn that down either. But that's the newest thing out there.
What is the what does the bushing do on a 1911? Sorry, my ignorance here.
Well, the bushing is fitted to the barrel. So that's where your main contact point is. It keeps it locked up. With the cone barrel, it actually locks into the slide. That's what it is. It's a cone barrel.
Like, so you're saying the outside diameter grows closer it is to the chamber?
Yeah. The outside dimensions of the barrel is actually the exact same outside dimension as the hole in the slide. So it locks, that's right. Where it slides. Where the bushing, it's a separate piece.
Okay. I'll have to watch some slow-mo video of 1911s being shot versus other firearms.
Well, I should have put the link in there because it was a gun magazine that actually I originally saw this on. Then I went into the Ruger site and I actually got the pictures and stuff. But the gun magazine had a video of the guy who wrote the article. So I didn't take any of his information. I just went into the Ruger Red site. But I was quite surprised at the muzzle flip.
MSRP is $1,019.
Yeah.
I guess that's normal.
US?
Well, yeah.
US. It's like over $200 more than the regular 1911. But the only difference is between the regular SR and 1911 is that this does have the adjustable sights and it does have the bull barrel and the nitrate coating. But besides that, it doesn't have ambi safeties. It doesn't have any other ambi controls. It's just straight 1911 with nicer sights.
But I mean, realistically, when it comes to 1911, when you're buying one in 10 millimeter, you're buying it, I think, a lot more for the novelty of a 10 millimeter 1911 than you are for the, I guess, like competition or anything like that. So, I mean, if you really want, throw an ambidextrous safety on there. They're everywhere. So, and they're not hard to change out. So.
Yeah. And it would be a factory. Any ambi safety would fit on that.
Yeah.
It has to be fitted, but there's nothing else on it is aftermarket except for the barrel is different. That's about it.
Yeah.
And maybe the recoil springs might be a little bit heavier.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, though, right? It's essentially just a
plus.
It's more of a novelty.
Show-off gun for the range.
Yeah, it's more of a show-off gun. It's a novelty, right? You're going to take it to the range once a year. You'll shoot your box of 50 rounds through it and go, man, that hurts my wrist. And you'll put it away and you'll save it till the next time you bring someone out and, you thought that one was big. Here, hold mine. Yeah, hold my beer.
It's $50 for a box of 10 millimeters. It's a dollar a bullet every time you pull the trigger.
Yeah, but you can just reload. If you're already set up for 40, you can probably... I think it's the same, no? 40 and 10 mil?
It's... Yeah, I think probably because the 40 is just a little bit shorter.
Except for, I think the... I would imagine that the resizing die would be different just because the 40 is longer.
Right, but your shell plate would be the same.
Your shell plate would be the same. Your bullet seating would be the same. Your expanding die, your crimp die, all that stuff would all be the same. It would just be possibly that one die that might need to change.
Yeah. But I'm flipping through the pictures and I just saw the one where it's lying on the side and it shows you the bottom and you can see how thin single stack pistols are. And now I think I need to buy one. Not even 10 mil, but man. Are the Norinco ones that skinny, or is this just is that just an optical illusion?
No, they're all that skinny.
They're all the same. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some at the charity shoot that you'll be able to try.
I remember you did try my 1911, and you didn't.
I don't
like
know.
It.
It's been so long, Thomas. My opinion could have changed. when I first qualified for. To bring restricteds to my range, the person, one of the guns they gave me to try out was a 1911 and 22 long rifle. So, and I thought it was a really nice gun. So, maybe I have to get one of those, those GSGs or something.
Yeah.
The first center fire I ever fired was World War II, 1911, and I loved it.
Oh, yeah? When you went over in the boat?
No, it was when I joined the gun club about 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Man, you had all that time and you only got into guns 20 years ago, Thomas?
No, pistols.
Right, they only issued officers pistols back then. I forgot.
Well, you know, Thomas had time to climb the ranks in the military back then by the time World War II rolled around.
Actually, when I was going through my manuals, I actually found the sales receipt for my first handgun, and it was 2000 when I bought my first nice. Pistol.
Earlier than most.
I had no use for handguns back then. I hate to say it, but I was a liberal. I was a hunter. I didn't think anybody should have handguns except the military or the police. And I ticked off a lot of range members by saying that. And then one day somebody let me shoot a pistol and skies opened up and the angels began to sing, and I was wrong the whole time because I loved it once I tried it. But that's the mentality that I grew up with, right?
Yeah,
I grew up with were hunters. You know, you didn't, and you could hunt with ARs back then. The AR wasn't considered a bad thing, but handguns were.
Yeah, I feel like you said, there's a lot of people who grew up like that, and even if they don't necessarily think that handguns are bad, they still just think, oh, all I ever need is my 30-30 and 12 gauge, right?
Yeah,
and that's basically all I had. I had my 12 gauge. I had my 3 or 4 22s growing up, and my 12 gauge, and that's all I needed. I saw no use for a handgun because I couldn't hunt with it. And I couldn't target shoot on my uncle's property with it because I had to belong to a club, and I didn't belong to a club. And it wasn't until I was actually buying some ammunition one day, and the guy at this gun store, I had he saw the date on it. He goes, oh, you're graduated for restricted. I said, no, I'm not approved for restricted. He goes, yeah, you are. And I'm arguing with the clerk. And he said, when you took the course, I said, I never took the course. I just challenged the test. He goes, oh, that doesn't matter. When you challenged the test, were there handguns in the test? And I said, yes. And for those 3 years, they approved everybody for both, but they never told them. So it wasn't until he actually, the president of Northumberland Pistol Revolver Club, took me up pistol shooting about 1998, 1999. And that's, when he took me up there, I didn't even want to go pistol shooting. I said, oh, I'll come with you, but I just want to shoot my 10-22. And he probably tried for about a half hour to get me to shoot. Like, he really worked on me to get me to try the handgun. And then, you know, if it wasn't for his persistence, I wouldn't be a handgun shooter. So, wow. I was wrong.
Wow. It's a rare moment, folks. Thomas admits he's wrong.
I'm wrong quite often, actually. And when I'm wrong on the show, Brian Bolivar promptly writes us and corrects us, too. So... Okay, so what's the main topic this week, Mike?
The main topic this week is The 4 Rules of Gun Safety by Brandon Curtis from Concealed Carry Nation. We have permission to use this, apparently.
Yes.
The 4 Rules of Gun Safety were put in place to ensure that no accidents happen. If these rules are followed 100% of the time, you can rest assured that you will most likely never have an accident with your firearms. These rules vary depending on the source, but the following list happens to be the author's favorites. So, Thomas, what is the first law?
Well, the first law is the gun is always loaded. Imagine you're at the range and a buddy of yours has a new gun that he just picked up. He asks you if you want to shoot it, and you say, well, obviously. Even if he shows you the gun is clear and he sets it down, the first thing you should do, always do, is when you pick it up, is do a safety check. This also applies to setting it down again. Whenever the gun is out of your control, even if you set it on the table for 30 seconds, you always want to do a safety check whenever you pick it up. There is no exception to this rule. In other words, do the acts and proofs every time. That wasn't in this article. I threw that in.
Yeah.
For our American listener, that is the Canadian Safety Course's acronym for make sure you're doing the 4 rules every time you pick up a firearm.
Well, yeah, that's the acts, and then the proof part of it is the... how to make sure that a gun is safe, which includes pointing it at your eyeball, because that makes sense.
Yeah, perfectly. So, like, what's the second law?
So, the second law is never point the gun at something you are not prepared to destroy.
Unless you're Canadian.
If you've done your safety check and are absolutely sure that your gun is unloaded, that does not give you the go-ahead to be careless with it. Remembering the first rule, the gun is always loaded, you should never point it toward anything that you are not prepared to destroy, including yourself.
And Benny, what's the third law?
The third law, always be sure of your target and what's behind it. Bullets can go through and beyond your intended target. Knowing what's behind your target is an essential step to safety and responsibility. Which is funny because I remember someone talking about setting up a chute, and they purposely put no chutes behind chutes. So you had to shoot at an angle so you didn't hit the no shoot behind your target, which I thought was really smart.
Yeah, just to make things more difficult. And if you're talking about in a quote-unquote real life, you know, self-defense scenario, you know, everything's not always square range and there are innocent people running around, and sometimes you have to shoot funny angles to make sure you don't shoot people you don't want to.
Well, it's funny because we actually have another story because of that. Because on the June 3rd, the OPP up in Nanavisaga Crime Unit and the Emergency Response Unit all responded, and the OPP, to a complaint of a local business. It was reported that stray projectiles had struck the business on the second floor. When officers arrived, a second stray round was found to have struck the business's front door. The business was open at the time of that incident, and fortunately, there were no injuries. Two male suspects were arrested. It was determined that they were target practicing with rifles in the backyard at a nearby residence and were unaware that they were stray bullets were hitting the business. The two guys were charged with discharging a firearm in a reckless manner and careless use of a firearm. They lost all their firearms, ammo, and their licenses had to be surrendered. The first penalty for the first offense for those two is 2 years, and the subsequent, if they get charged in the second offense, is a 5-year prison sentence, plus court costs, the EMS costs, and the fine. So you always have to make sure what's behind your target, because bad things can happen.
Yep.
So what's the fourth law, Mike?
Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target. Keep your booger hook off the bang switch.
Exactly.
Yeah. This fourth rule, arguably the most important one, should be practiced 100% of the time, as with all the other rules. With any modern firearm, as long as your finger is away from the trigger guard, your firearm will not discharge. Knowing this, there should be 0% chance of a negligent discharge. Notice we didn't say accidental discharge because there is such a thing as an accidental discharge, it's just people are idiots. It's negligent, period. There is such a thing as an accidental discharge. If something malfunctioned inside your gun, a part broke at like the worst possible time, hammer went forward and
in general,
then you can have it.
Do you need me to go on?
safeties do break. It has happened.
So there is such a thing as an accidental discharge. Just 99.99% of the time when they say on the news, oh, there's an accidental shooting, it was an accidental negligent. It was because someone was not keeping these four rules in
play.
They're
using the word accident to try and not blame anyone. Or in the colloquial, someone is responsible and,
And if there's injury to personal property or persons, you're going to be charged.
Yeah.
So it was funny. I was going through all my owner's manuals and just to see what the different manufacturers type of warnings, because I always read my manual, don't I, George? Most of them have right in the beginning, but I'll just go through some because there's quite a difference in the different manufacturers and the type of warnings and the amount of warnings in the various manuals. Like Grand Power, for example, has 23 safety rules. My Rossi M92 lever action has got a combination of 29. Okay, so they've got 29 dangers, warnings, notices, safety first, and one caution, which is kind of strange. Of course, the Savage bolt action guns have the 10 commandments of firearm safety. The Rimfires are pretty cool. They've got the 10 commandments twice. They've got it in the first beginning of the manual, and then there's a pullout registration card that you send to the company. They've got them again on the pullout registration card as well too. So it's kind of funny seeing it twice in the same thing, but it's a good thing. Weatherby pumps have the 10 commandments, but it's the very back of the manual, which is, it's something you want to see in the front, but you'd have to go to the very last page to get the safety things. The new Marlin bolt guns have the 10 commandments, but the old Marlin lever action has 24 rules. Remington ARs have the 10 commandments. My original Smith & Wesson Model 29 manual had no safety rules in it whatsoever.
That's because the trigger was so darn heavy, it didn't matter. You could keep your finger on it all day long.
Actually, it was pretty good. Oh, what else? Yeah, Mossberg, they're in the back again, back of the manual, and they have the 10 commandments. STI has five precautions followed by the Ten Commandments. All Ruger firearms, like I've got Ruger pistols, semis, and bolts. Their manuals are very similar across the board. They all have Ten Commandments, but they're all in the back of the book for some reason. H&R has the Ten Commandments. Same with Remington. Kimber has 23 rules. CZ has 23 rules. Benelli's kind of funny. The semis have 11 rules, but the pumps have 14 rules. Walther P22, it comes in five different languages, but there was no safety rules contained in any of the, it's a huge manual.
I guess they can you read all five different languages though?
No. But even in English, there was no safety rules. And the Benelli had 12 rules. I just thought it was funny that there was such a variation.
The last one says Beretta.
What did I say?
Benelli.
Okay, well, last one, Beretta has 12 rules.
Yeah.
And I discovered I have a para-ordnance LDA, light doubled action trigger manual. I've never owned a para-ordnance. I have no idea where that manual came from.
The Savage one, where it's on the warranty card, it's meant because someone who probably registered their gun did something stupid with it and said, oh, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that. Well, they said, fine, we'll put the rules right on the warranty card. So if you send in your warranty card, then we have proof that you read the rules. And if you blow up your gun, tough nugs.
Actually, that's a good liability thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like a half decent idea.
Yeah, but who looks at their warranty card until after they need their warranty?
Yeah, that's true too. I'm not going to argue with that one. But yeah, a lot of these rules, though, I seem to remember hearing at one point in time, Glock used to have one of their rules was never to holster a loaded gun. So some of these rules that they put in place, and that's why we say that the four rules are the four rules, right? They are the important rules. They are the ones that keep people safe and, you know, leaving with the same number of holes that they came with. Right. All the extra rules are liability and things like that, as far as I'm concerned. And range rules. Like you go to a range and, you know, from the ceiling to the floor, there's 1,001 different rules. And I'm not arguing. Some of them are very good rules, like don't get drunk while you're shooting. Okay, good idea. But those aren't the four safety rules. Those are not the four commandments.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. And I think like the only firearms that I've seen this in the manual is in my Jericho, where it will say don't use reloaded ammunition, just which I believe is just to get them out of that liability.
Yeah, if you double charge your gun.
Same with the Ruger. I believe in the Ruger manual, it says that it'll avoid the warranty if you use remanufactured. Most manufacturers will say do not use remanufactured ammunition.
Yeah, because I would also imagine that if you ever got a double charge from a manufacturer, just a federal, you know, you put that through your gun might say, no, we won't warranty it, but federal might warranty it. But if you're making your own ammunition and you double charge it and you try and get the warranty from the gun, well, that's your only chance, right? If it doesn't work, then you're SOL.
I've heard of double charges in factory ammo.
I'm not saying they don't happen. I'm just saying that there's almost someone else that you can put the blame on and for them to cover the warranty work.
Which should happen. When I got double charged for, it was a 22 and it blew up my my first Mark II pistol and federal covered it.
Yeah.
They rebuilt the gun, they gave me a brick of ammo, and they gave me $75 US for my inconvenience.
Well, there you go.
That's good.
Luckily, I still had the actual, what was left of the case that I sent back to them, so like they could prove to them that it wasn't me, it was the gun. And they got the gun too, so they knew that it wasn't an obstruction in the barrel, it was an extremely high pressure in the cartridge, which they treated me well for it, so I still use federal from time to time.
Yeah.
So, Benny, what's the events this week?
Events. Event number one is Carbine Operator Course by Ragnarok Tactical, July 7th, Kitchener, Ontario. $200 included. That's tax included. I'm going to be there. Mike's going to be there. Our wives will be hanging out in the clubhouse. So if you want to bring your significant other, they can chill together. It's going to be a blast.
Or if you want to get all the dirt on us, then there's going to be a little session held.
Yes. I've trained my wife well. So unless you use severe... interrogation techniques, I doubt it's going to work.
No.
You can try, though.
Now, that just might be just about booked up. Gavin did say that if they got more people that they thought about doing a second one, or some of the guys would actually step back and not take the course and let listeners join. So if you're interested, I would contact them as soon as you can, because it's less than a month away.
Yeah, that's only like three weeks away now.
Yeah.
Coming up quick.
Okay, and what's event two, Mike?
The next day is the 7th Annual Canadian Podcaster Charity Shoot. So that's on July 8th. Guelph, Ontario is $40, and links in the show notes. I'll be there. I know Benny won't be able to make it. Are you going to be there, Thomas?
No.
No? Okay.
And then event three is the Florenceville Gun Club is having the 4th annual club fundraiser. We got a poster finally from Ash. The first prize is a Tika T3, 223 Remington, or you can take $1,500 in cash. Second prize is a 22 long rifle Henry lever action, or $400 in cash. They've got a nice pair of Sightron, I believe, binoculars, and some safety glasses. Links from the show note. They're only selling 400 tickets. It's $20 a ticket, and the draw is going to be at the end of September. I'm not sure how many tickets are left, but I understand it's selling out pretty quick. So you've got a 1 in 400 chance of winning, three half-decent prizes for $20. So
it's funny because I sat down my dad and tried very hard to convince him not to buy a bolt action in 223. But $1,500 will take you a long way to get a nice 1 in 308. So go for it, people.
Well,
oh, yeah, you could sell it.
Yeah.
Here's a consideration, though. In Ontario, where can you find a range long enough that a 223 bolt gun wouldn't be a viable long range gun? Okay. Yeah, so unless you're going to like a military range, or you're going to get into the PRS stuff, you know, most people, like, I know my range only goes to 200. Another range I used to be a member at only goes to 300. Like, 300 seemed to be the longest. Around here.
I think the same around here.
But it's still a very popular hunting caliber, too.
308 or 223?
308.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But this the picture of this gun, this is a beautiful gun. This isn't something that I'd want to be lugging through the wood. It looks like it's 100 pounds, and it looks beautiful, right? I would want to sit that at a bench and just make tiny little holes in it. And for me, 200-300 yards, a 223 is adequate for that.
I'd take the 1500 in cash, to be honest with you.
So would I, because I have no use for a bolt gun, but that's a different...
I'm just saying,
it's a nice gun, and 223 is not a bad caliber.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like when I was... For my dad, he was putting in money into this, and I was just thinking, if it's a couple hundred bucks extra, go for the 308, because the potential is that much further. And so I would have gone for that more. But it still is a very the gun itself looks really nice, and I would think upgrading it would be not something you'd have to do, but possible.
Yeah.
If you want to get it chambered in 308.
Pretty much put like a scope on there and a bipod and you're off to the races.
Yeah. You have to look at the club too. Like, Florenceville is really into silhouette shooting, so they probably have a very long outdoor range that you could take advantage of something like this.
Oh, okay.
They have long range matches all the time. So,
oh, okay.
I can see this being very popular to its members.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, you got to cater to your members.
Yep.
And the other thing you can remember is we said earlier in the show, we have a 10% discount code for Red Hill Tactical. It's RHT for Red Hill Tactical, and then NCS for New Shooter Canada. You get 10% off all your gear, and might be getting a new holster for Sarah soon.
Yeah.
Any listener emails this week?
Nope, we don't have any. Please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in our comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca.
And nothing on iTunes. Facebook likes are 1,113 as of now. We went down one. So like us on Facebook. We really like getting likes. We hate going down. Benny gets really upset when our Facebook likes start to drop down.
Yeah, people, what is up with that?
Okay, closing comments. Well, this week we put a lot in there about all the safety rules and how to keep yourself and other people safe on the range. But unfortunately, accidents do happen. On a very sad note, the media reported on a deadly accident at a match last weekend in BC. A very experienced shooter lost control of his firearm. As he tried to recover the falling gun, it discharged and it killed him. If for any reason you ever lose control of your firearm, never try to recover as it falls. Modern guns have drop safeties. These are designed to prevent the firearm from discharging upon impact. The safest thing to do if you drop a firearm, let it fall and take the DQ. Mike, any shoutouts this week?
Yeah, I have a few shoutouts to all the SOs at the cancer donation match. Peter for running such a great match for a great cause, and to all the guys and Sarah that were in the squad. It was a really fun squad to be in, and they were very patient, especially with Sarah when her gun broke and she had to pretty much run around and put a new holster on and a new. New mag pouches, load up her mags and all that stuff. They were very patient with her. And yeah, it was an awesome group and we had a great time. And since today is also Father's Day, I'd also like to give a big shout out to all the fathers out there.
And Benny?
As usual, I like to give a shout out to my wife. She knows what she did. I also want to give a thought.
What did she do?
She put up with me for 9 hours in a car. Today yeah, and okay, Thursday. That deserves a shout out now. What else? I also want to give a shout out to Rafi. He was the guy who took me out shooting, lent me some guns, paid for all the ammo and some of the range fees, and yeah. So,
wow, nicer than Thomas. I mean, that's not a high bar to beat, but still, that's nice of him.
Yeah, but it was really good. It was great. It was nice. Shut up. So he doesn't listen to the show. He's American. What does he need with new Canadians? But yeah, so shout out to him. Thanks.
Awesome. I'm going to use Benny. Shout out to my wife this week. I'm supposed to quit smoking because I went to the doctor and apparently I have moderate COPD. So I've been trying to quit smoking and she hasn't been on my case for sneaking out and having a cigarette. She's been putting up with me. And a shout out to my neighbor, Brett. Remember a couple of months ago when I was talking about quitting smoking and George was telling me how great Zyban was and go get some Zyban, how he got such a great buzz off it and it really helped him quit smoking. I went and got, I think the doctor gave me 109 pills. I took three. That stuff drives you crazy. It's not a good thing to take. It really isn't. So I started looking at all the warnings online. Out of 7,000 people that took it, 8 people committed homicides. Apparently the side effect for this drug is that not only do you commit suicide, you kill people. So all that Zyban got thrown down the sink. And I went to talk to my neighbor, Brett. Actually, he came over and asked me for a cigarette. I said, oh man, I've only got 2 left. Okay, and I gave him a cigarette. I said, I'm trying to quit smoking. He goes, oh, what are you taking? And so I got the patch and the Zyban. And he's an addiction counselor or a retired addiction counselor. And I was telling, I mentioned this Zyban. He goes, dude, you can't take that. He goes, what do you mean? You own guns. Don't take Zyban. And then he told me all these horror stories that he came across from people that had taken it and had ended up coming through his doors. So,
oh, wow.
So when George said Zyban's great, don't take Zyban. It's not. I'm telling you, I went snaky for 3 days. I had to throw it all out. I had to buy cigarettes. So I got the patch. I got to start the patch tomorrow. But thanks for warning me about the Zyban, Brett. It's not good stuff. It really isn't. It gives you well, never mind the insomnia, but the craziest dreams. And after 3 days, I was walking the walls. It was just I had to get rid of it. It's not a good stuff. If you read some of the news articles, especially from England, it's got horrible side effects and does nasty things. So if you got to quit smoking, go for laser, go for hypno, go for the patch, but don't put any drugs in your system to replace the drugs that are already in your system from the nicotine. So you want to take us out, Mike?
Sure. So until next time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the stakes, it's about the odds. No, other way around, people. Sorry. It's not about... I've been thinking about switching it around.
9 hours in the car will do it to you.
I was thinking about switching it around because it doesn't sound... I thought it would sound better, but it's about the stakes. It's not about the odds. I think that flows a little better.
So keep your barrels down range. It flows a lot better. Thanks for putting up with us again. Keep your barrels down range and smoking, and we'll be speaking to you next week. And actually, Mike will be co-host next week, so things should go a lot smoother. Good night, everybody.
Cult lead host.
Good night.
Damn.
Nice.
Well, I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
Like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale until I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.
So who's co-host this week?
I'm co-host, your lead host.
Okay.
I assume that's what you meant.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Boy, your picture's so big. Anyway.
Are you calling me fat?
Maybe. There you go.
You really fill the camera.
Quick, let me get the wide-angle lens. You really want to piss a girl off? Say that.
No, you still have to be quiet.
No giggling.
A deficit is how you gauge the success of a government.
Oh, really?
Maybe if the lead host had introduced the main topic, we wouldn't have this issue.
Well, if you would have read the whole thing, The Four Rules of Gun Safety by Brandon Curtis, Concealed Carry Nation, use with permission.
Okay, so that can all go into outtakes.
No.
Yes.
Come on, you had to have seen that coming.
Natakawasa, wherever it's up near Barrie someplace.
Sorry, we want to try that again. Natawasaga.
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 Natawasaga. Okay.
I'm not even up to like Googling at them on Google yet.
Again, three bullets touching 100 yards with a red dot. It was amazing the accuracy I was getting with that lever, the new Hornady ammunition.
Red dot on a lever gun.
No, you got to get like a really, really long optic that has a very small
long.
The tube that's just as long as the barrel.
Yeah, exactly. Mike knows where it's at.
Yeah.
My reference for that is Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Hang on here.
I know all about these things. It's not even spaghetti westerns. It's Back to the Future.